Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Now, I need you all for a project. James Jeffries, a friend of Robert's, is sponsoring Dumpty Dum. He is very nearly as clever as Robert, and actually slightly more creative. He builds prototypes for the web and does some amazing things with data for arts and culture. In fact, I may ask him to work on the village website if I can loosen Jennifer's grip on the thing. He's worked with all the best people, you know. The BBC Research and Development team, creating interactive story explorers for Homefront and Peaky Blinders. For the London Philharmonic Orchestra, creating a prototype of a searchable archive of their historic performances. Once, he even built some tweeting receipt printers for a Bill Drummond exhibition. Now that's the kind of innovation we need for the Village Show. So if you'd like to talk to him about your project idea, you can get in touch with him at Robert, what's his email address? James@shedcode.co.uk. That's James@shedcode.co.uk. Or you could have a browse of his website, shedcode.co.uk. Do tell him I was looking for him if you see him, won't you? I want him to design me a digital resurgam stone.
My name is Helen Bowden, and I'm the director of BBC Radio, and today is the last day at the BBC for me after 34 years, and I want to share a tune with you that's been important to me since I was about 4.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the spirited evening of nationalism, that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the last kilt in the pawn shop, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our burn tonight, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from Helen Bowden, director of BBC Radio.
I just say, Derek Fletcher got this for us.
Mm.
And for those that don't know, Helen Bowden, she's basically the queen. If you're in radio, it would be like having... No, she's the queen. She's the queen of radio. And she sang us a Dumpty Dum. That's amazing.
Because she's slinging in a towel, isn't she?
Yes, I think she's just thrown caution to the winds and come over to the side of the lunatics. So she's now...
You know what? Luce, we should actually get her on the show to talk about all things radio for it and the Archers. She's got time on her hands now.
She has. She would just be sitting there twiddling her thumbs.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we salute you, Miss Bowden, for your wondrous Dumpty Dum. But you've been busy this week, haven't you, Juicy Luce?
I have. I've been networking like a little networker, I have. I met...
Like Lily Pargiter?
Yes, but with some sense of tact and decency. I went to see Sonny Ormond with my mum on Saturday night. And she does a one-woman show, which is sort of half Lillian and half a lot of chat and funniness. And she reads poetry and she does all kinds of things. And she's wonderful.
Where was that?
A very fun evening. It was in Market Harborough.
Ooh, okay.
All the glamour. And there were two very nice Dumpty Dum people there. Hello, Dumpty Dum people. I asked the lady what her name was, and she told me that she was on Twitter and she's English Wine. But I looked her up and there's about a billion English Wines and I'm not sure which one she is. So make yourself known, nice lady. And that was all very lovely. And
can you pay me the compliment, please? Can you tell this?
Oh, yes, sorry. And bloody nice Nora. Lady's husband. Sorry. Nice. I have already said this to you once. Nice lady's husband said that he didn't realise he was interested in American politics until you started talking about 10 American presidents. And now he listens to it. And he loves it, and he listens to Dumpty Dum and 10 American Presidents when he's taking his dogs for a walk, and he said that their legs are getting shorter and shorter because the podcasts are getting longer and longer.
Awesome. Now, Juicy Loose, is somebody who'd like to send in a Dumpty Dum? Do you actually have to be a director of the BBC to do that, or can you just be a random?
You could just be a normal person. If you'd like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction or flush out a joint, ring us on 02030313105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Shedcode for sponsoring us, and Auntie Margie for the cup of tea, who's just brought it in. Thank you.
Are you in Market Harborough?
No.
Oh, okay.
Auntie Margie is in London. And to Derek for the load of the back bedroom. There has been a bit of wintry weather in Ambridge this week, and Derek has been shoveling snow for Auntie Cardboard. She said it had given him rosy cheeks. He really put his trousers back on.
On this week's episode, we have calls from Witherspoon, who makes a Rob call, Andrew Horn, who thinks Justin's just in it for the money, Robert Wilson, Lucy's favourite, who's pissed yet again, probably on whiskey. And from New York, we have New York Nigel, who's suffering from plot whiplash. But first, oh, it's all blokes.
It is, isn't it? Well, we've had some emails from the ladies, so that's all right.
Oh, okay, that's good then. All right, but first, before the calls from the blokes and the emails from the ladies, it's Lucy Freeman's week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Miranda in her bath while she sloughed off her epidermis with her Dermalogica Apricot Weetabix and Swarfiga facial scrub. Justin got on the blower to fag ash, insisting that we had seen the last of Stefan without in any way explaining how or why. I know as radio listeners we are supposed to fill in the gaps ourselves, but this is getting ridiculous. Shula, Lillian and Anisha went out coconutting, as I shall now call it, for reasons of understanding last week's Dumpty Dum. And then Delia, who was taking a break away from working on her new cookery book, How to Peel a Banana, went over a fence, but the horse didn't. Anisha leapt to the rescue, shouting at Shula to get out of the light. I can't see the horse because he's obscured by your massive bottom, Shula. Everyone ignored Delia, who hauled herself home with her arm hanging off, shouting, "No, no, honestly, I'm fine," while they all fussed about the horse, who was sniggering quietly as he got to go home early and eat toast by the fire while the other horses had Lillian and Shula lumbering around on top of them. Susan is worried about disappointing her public by not looking perfectly groomed at all times. She has a full colonic irrigation before brekkie every morning while she's doing her eyeliner. It won't be long before Neil loses his patience with Susan's needy fishing for compliments. No, you don't look like Audrey Hepburn or Raquel Welch or any of them. You look like Ian McCaskill in a wig and where's my tea? They make a big thing out of Burns Night at the Bull, said Alistair. Yes, whichever drug-crazed loon they've got wielding the skillet this time burns even more of the menu than usual. Jazza and Anisha turned up at the Bull dressed as the Crankies, and Anisha drank him under the table by the simple expedient of cheating wildly. Rex went wandering around the village on Bobber Job Week. He has offered his services to David in the Brookfield Lambing Shed, rubbing down fat pull blockers piles with some heavy gauge sandpaper, as a rent by the hour gigolo at the Laurels, teeth optional. And finally, Bert got him a job trimming Anisha's bush.
Oh, God, Lucy. Sorry.
It feels like we're a real couple, doesn't it, Toby, said Pip. Toby didn't answer. They were snuggled up in bed together, eating flapjacks, with Pip daydreaming happily while Toby texted his gang connections in Brighton and siphoned all Pip's money into his savings account. Ursula came back. blimey, we get rid of one titchy knob and immediately acquire another. Pat went full-on Peggy Mitchell and kicked Arcelor up the bottom all the way out the shop. Get out and stay out. The whole village seems to be chatting away very merrily about Lillian and Justin. It seems to be the most public affair since Prince Charles and Camilla. It's a shame you can't carry on rogering your boss, Lillian, said Pat. He was clearly a good shag, and it's such a shame his irritating wife got in the way. Tee! Peggy and Jill met up and plotted smashing up St. Stephen's. Is that what they call muscular Christianity? It was the usual sort of oblique, passive-aggressive chat the pair of them specialise in. Sometimes you just have to admit when you're wrong, said Peggy, heroically resisting the temptation to add, you mad old bat. I know I've got things wrong. Yes, you have, said Jill emphatically, whipping out a list a yard long, headed 1, telling Helen she'd made an excellent choice with Rob. However, some good did come out of this strange little chat. Over at Brooker's, there has been a rapprochement. Ooh. For bewildering reasons, Jill had Christmas Day all over again, shinned back up the bookcase and covered it in crackers, and then they all turned into the Bolton. Good night, John boy. The end.
Oh, I really enjoyed that this week. Well done, you. Oh. You've had a colonic.
Sorry?
Have you ever had a colonic?
Have I?
Yeah.
No.
I
just talk shit. I don't wash it away. I talk about.
I had one once. It's the most amazing experience. Yeah. You don't all feel energized. I can completely understand how people get addicted to them. Like Princess Diana was addicted to them, wasn't she?
Yeah, I'm not sure if addicted is the word, but what do you mean energised? How can you feel energised after having something shoved in your
it's
bottom?
It's amazing, Lucy. Only did it once, and it was about 10, 12 years ago. So you have the pipe kind of inserted in your behind, and of course you feel somewhat uncomfortable because, you know, it's a random stranger who's putting a pipe up your jacksie.
If it was someone you knew, you wouldn't mind, is that what you're saying?
Well, if it was one of your loved ones, you know, you'd feel less conscious about it. But anyway, and then you do see, I don't want to put anybody off their dog walk here, but you do see the colour of the stuff. And they make a point of saying, oh, you know, look at that. And it's, oh, you go, oh, God. And then...
What do you mean they make a point of going, oh, look at
no,
what?
No. You kind of look at it. They make a point of saying, oh, you know, we're flushing you out and blah, blah, blah. And you see the colour of this stuff and it goes down the tube. But then it just keeps going.
It's poo colour, isn't it?
Yes. But then, right, after, I don't know, 3-5 minutes, then it's pretty clear. But it keeps on going. I forget how long she had it shoved at me, Jaxie. But let's say it was half an hour. I do
that
forget.
That is not a sentence I ever expected to hear on this podcast. I forget how long she had it shoved up my Jaxie.
But, you know, just...
Welcome to Dumpty Dum, folks. The show where we literally talk shit.
And so anyway, so that was that. And then...
No, sorry, I interrupted. So then it goes clear, does it?
Yeah, then it goes clear. Relatively quickly, but it's still whooshing away. Anyway, so then you get up, and Lucy, I was walking to the bus stop, and then I thought, why don't I run to the bus stop? And I started sprinting to the bus stop, and then I started walking up. You know, your little kids like to walk on walls. I was walking on walls. I was doing all manner of. I was saying hello to random strangers, and I thought, what's come over me? Seriously, you feel so energized after
that. It's psychological. That.
No, it's not.
If you had to have that done.
Oh, but... my God. Listen, stop it, Lucy. Because I don't want to, again, put people off their early morning commute on the tube, off their dog walk. But, like, 10 ton of shit has literally been, you know, shoveled out of you. You feel lighter. You absolutely do. You lose, I don't know, 3-4 pounds straight away. And I couldn't believe, because it took me a long time to realise why I was so energised. And I literally did run for the bus. And I hadn't done that in like forever. And there's no reason to. You are lighter. And then the next day, well, for the next few days, your movements are very peculiar. Things just fly out of you at such speed. It's like there's no friction on the sun. Wham, bam, like that. It's like... Oh, yeah, I'm not really one for hippy-dippy stuff, right? I'll do a bit of Buddhism and a little bit of meditation, but really I'm not a hippy dippy person. But this was a real revelation to me, and you know, you just felt lighter, you felt energized, and I'm all for a colonic, but I've never had one since. But yeah, I just just occurred to me.
It was so good. Why didn't you haven't had one again then?
Because I'm trying to remember exactly why I even had this. It was a friend. It was a friend's friend who was starting a practice in West London, and she was drumming up trade, and my website at the time, she wanted an advert on there, and she said, I'll give you one. And I went, okay. And she went, no, it'll be fine, you know, you really enjoy it, and you know, and I went, okay. Under duress, after putting off about three or four times, I finally went, and it was great. It was absolutely great. And we ended up having about three or four hydroclonic clients are on the site, and it's good stuff. Good stuff. But anyway,
Not natural though, is it? I mean, the human body wasn't. I mean, it has its own escape mechanism. Really,
You could say a lot of things of which we do aren't particularly natural, Lucy.
Yes.
In terms of just taking waste product out of your bowels and a shed load of it, dare I say a shit ton of it, right? It's not a bad thing, and you do physically feel lighter and energized. And if someone had said this to me, I'd have gone, yeah, whatevs. But no, I am living proof, Lucy. Anyway, last week in Ambridge.
Yes. Quite liked it. Little bit unconvinced still that Rob's gone.
Oh, of course he hasn't gone.
I know. Well, he hasn't left the country because I saw him last night at the awards. I forgot. Timothy Watson's actually quite small, because in my head I'd convinced myself.
You know
that
Rob... You've got to stop with this small stuff, right? You've got a real little chippy thing about people being small, as if to say, like, you're 6 foot one or something or another.
Yeah, it's the towering giant.
Exactly.
I am at 5 foot five. In my head, when you find somebody threatening, you tend to imagine them as taller than they actually are. And if you ask to estimate somebody's height, and you have that kind of, if you see them as holding a superior status to you or somehow threatening, then you'll often describe them as taller than you. And in my head I had made Timothy Watson a lot taller than me, but actually he's not. They didn't win. He was up for an award, and so was Louisa Petitcas. Neither of them did win an award. But
what awards were they
but
up
the
for?
Archers, they were up for best actor in a drama and best actress in a drama. They still use this sexist actress actor thing, which Lenny Henry had to shout at everybody about. But they did win the overall contribution to British drama. The whole Archers did. So it wasn't like individual awards just for them. And Sean O'Connor was there and made a speech. But the nicest thing was one
did
of
you
the
punch
new...
Him? Did you boo and hiss?
Actually, at one point I had warned the person I was with that I didn't massively want to get in a big, you know, be introduced to him or anything, and I suddenly realized he was standing to my right, and I was saying to Paul, move over, keep moving, to try and sort of block me so I couldn't see him and he couldn't see me. That was ridiculous. Anyway, yes, the guy that there's two awards for. There's the Imerson and the Tinniswood award for best new playwright, and one bloke won both, which is unusual. And he was only about sort of 20. He came up on stage and accepted his award and immediately started talking about the Archers, which was a real surprise. His play that he'd written was about free speech and was very sort of politically oriented. A drama, but he said he wanted to thank his mum for making him be fascinated by radio drama, because she started him off on the Archers when he was about three. And he said, and look what can happen true to things like the Archers when we've raised over £100,000 for refuge and all that. And the audience went wild. It was great. It was a real big up the Archers evening. It was very, very nice.
Was Paul there? Paul Truman?
No. I hope someone tells him, actually, that in fact, I should, shouldn't I? That he got a lot of love because...
Well, dare I say it, it shouldn't be our job to tell him.
No.
But he really should have been there.
Refuge. I don't think anyone from Refuge was there either.
That's a bit crappy as well.
Well, they're not great at their sort of invitation mailing lists and organisations.
I know, because I didn't get one.
No. Well, they knew you were in San Francisco, see?
Oh, okay. All right. Fair dues. So you're rubbing shoulders with the stars and with BBC bigwigs as you do every year. Am I on the blacklist? Is that the reason why I'm not there? Why
no,
let Henry in then? He should be on the blacklist too.
Last night, he was up on stage, and so was what's his name? Sinkoli.
The Scottish bloke.
Yeah.
Hardeep Sinkoli, isn't it? Something.
Hardeep Sinkoli, yeah. That's right. And he looked fantastic. He got like this pale pink turban on and like this sort of shiny blue silk suit. He just looked fantastic. Mm. And Lenny Henry was hosting, and they were both stood up on stage, and Hardeep Singh Kohli looked out into the audience and said, I'm looking out now at a sea of middle-aged white men. And he said, just because there's two of us up here on this stage, I don't want you to feel that this industry isn't for you as well. Two black guys in the whole, you know, the only two black guys in the whole room on stage at the same time. But it was very good. Very good. It was, I really enjoyed it this year.
Awesome. Right. Shall we do caller inners?
Yes, we should.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
Witherspoon.
Awesome.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Yokel Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. We're just back from a walk and placing Have You Seen This Man, Rob Titchener? If so, stay away from him. Posters on trees throughout Greenwich Village. One can talk about many things after an excellent week in Ambridge, but this will be an all-Rob call. Picking up on what Royfield was saying, it is very difficult to predict what is going to happen. That's why psychiatrists prefer to analyze the past, and past behavior is the best predictor for future actions. As Royfield said, look carefully for the breadcrumbs that the scriptwriters leave. We speculated that Rob had murdered Stefan or would kidnap Giddy Jack, but while he is a narcissist with a capital N and a misogynist with a capital M, his sociopathy has a slightly smaller S. He will lie, block culverts, embezzle, bribe, and abuse his wife, no small misdeeds, but perhaps there are some limits to his madness and to his crimes. Now, I, for one, thought he had gone back to his parents' home to lick his wounds, but we discovered, through Ursula's panicked eyes, this had not occurred. Now, if we follow the breadcrumbs back in time, we remember that Jess had remarked that Rob's pattern is to cut and run when he's in trouble. So perhaps he has gone back to America. God, I better put up more posters. One issue I disagree with Royfield, I could not see Rob having mild personality changes and continuing to live in the village. As Lucy has said, making any progress in treating a narcissist takes a long, long, long time. I went back and searched for what Sean O'Connor had actually said about the future of Rob and Helen. This is what I found. Quote, they are umbilically linked together forever, as long as they have those children together, so I think there are another 20 to 30 years in the story. End quote. So perhaps Rob will just fly in on his broom periodically, or perhaps the new editor feels differently about him and will write him out completely. Finally, just a very important note about Rob and Ursula. There's a condition called folie à deux, or shared psychotic disorder. In it, a delusional belief is transmitted from one individual to another, usually family members. Ursula definitely has the risk factors of being the secondary patient. Female gender, suggestibility, passivity, histrionic personality traits, and suspiciousness. Ursula was truly on the edge of being unhinged on Friday, and Pat handled her oh so well. I just wish she had also exclaimed, "Your son raped my daughter, you bitch." On that note, we'll bid you adieu. Talk to you soon.
Folie à deux. That sounds very, very exciting. It actually sounds quite a little bit naughty, as French things so often do and then turn out to be quite dull. But that is not quite dull. It is very interesting. And I thought it was really, really good. The scene with Ursula and Pat, when Ursula did that thing that narcissists do, which is sliding from the aggressor to the victim within the space of one conversation. Mm. I mean, they could do it. The practiced ones can do it within the space of one sentence. But so she started off saying, "Well, I presume you know where he is. Of course, you and your horrible family, you've done this. And I wouldn't expect, you know," really aggressive. And then by the end of it, she's in tears. And that wasn't just Pat. That wasn't just Pat's sort of strength that led her to do that. It was sort of fairly typical behavior, I think. Then saying, "Oh, but you, how can you leave? You know, you're a mother too. How could you, what would you feel like if you're, you know?" And she said, "I've lost my son." And I think, you know, Pat would have been well within her rights to say, "Well, I lost my daughter for 6 months because of your son," you know. But it was an excellent scene and I loved it. And as soon as Pat started saying to Ursula, "You did this to your son. You've made him like this, you and your husband," that's when the waterworks started. And that's when she really kind of, Ursula really sort of collapsed then, and then started doing victim, 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 victim. But yes, lovely scene. Loved the atmosphere of the rain hammering down outside them in this sort of dimly lit shop. And she's saying, "Get out. Don't come back," and the door opening and everything, and knowing that she's going out into the rain like, you know, Kathy. It was great. Mm. Hoorah.
I think also it was significant that we had Alan played a part in that to warn Pat that Ursula was on the way. And I is convinced that the reappearance of Rob, you know, there'll be a significant part of Alan will be in that right. as well. Because it's got to be. But I thought it was rather delicious too. And well spotted on all the kind of the atmospherics. Felt like it was some scene from some 1940s kind of black and white movie. It was
Brief Encounter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brief unpleasant encounter. That's what it was. Ooh. Oh, Andrew Horn now.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. I've got a few points to make about Justin. One refers to the conversation last week about why do Justin and Miranda stay together and their understanding. And it may be something as pragmatic as the way Justin's finances are structured. I don't know if anyone else heard the IPM series over the Christmas New Year period about an affair with a different viewpoint from the wife, the husband and the lover. And the husband was quite pragmatic in that, where he said, you know, a lot of his finances were structured, a lot of things basically in his wife's name. So that could be part of it. Coming back to this week's episodes, I was surprised that Brian wasn't in the circle of trust, he's supposed to be close to Justin. I know he's a bit of a puppet chairman. He's there because he has the local opinion. But I'm surprised that Brian wasn't brought into the circle of trust in terms of the real reason that Rob was dispatched. So that sort of worried me a bit. And then it also worried me that Helen didn't know until she went into the shop. Brian was busting to tell Tony and Pat. He'd got blessing from Justin to do so. So why didn't he? 3 days later, and she still didn't know. That didn't seem right. And finally, on Friday, so Sean O'Connor's left. He's gone to EastEnders. And it looked like the Justin character, well, certainly the Justin actor, popped up at the top of the Shard on Friday in a similar role as a property developer about to tear up the East End, with Max as his evil henchman this time. So, you know, are we actually going to see a formal linking? Is it going to be Damara that pop up in EastEnders? Anyway, it's not really of interest to Dumpty Dum, but it's sort of parallel. Speak to you all soon. Bye.
What's Horny Boy got to say for himself?
Well, as long-term listeners will know, my grip and grasp on financial matters is somewhat tenuous. Mm. And so I never understand how anybody's finances are structured, least alone Justin. I do understand marriages where people, they're a marriage of convenience and it's easier to just stay together because you're a brand. I better be careful what I say here. But, and I do get that impression with Miranda and Justin that it is about, you know, let's keep the money because, you know, if you stay together, you get double the money, basically. And I think there's an awful lot of marriages that survive on those principles, really, which is unbelievably sad. But there we are.
But you know what, though, it's not even just that. That is one way of looking at it. But also, a couple can be together for such a long time. Yeah, it's a brand, but also it's kind of habit. And also, you don't want to necessarily go through all the unpleasantness of a divorce. Number one, you don't want to go...
You'd just rather be unhappy on a day-to-day basis,
well,
really.
No, but I would question, and I don't know, and I know I can be contrary at the best of times, and sometimes I'm contrary on this podcast just to throw in another voice, because we can't always just agree with each other. But you can have a marriage whereby two people are together and it is a partnership and it's a social partnership. So
yes,
we do things together because we just do and it suits us both. However, personally, we go off and do our own thing.
Yeah.
And that can have nothing to do with the allocation of resources post a divorce. Yeah. It's just a case of, well, I need somebody to go to me with this function, that function. We have a wider family. We do certain things together. However, when we don't put on that public face, I do what I want to do and you do what you want to do. As long as you don't rub my nose in it, it's fine.
Yeah. It's like Frank and Claire Underwood.
Absolutely. Well done. House of Cards. Yeah.
It was quite interesting. At the Lillian Bellamy evening, she asked the audience, can you see... Someone said, will Lillian... There was a question and answer thing and they said, will Lillian ever meet anybody, you know, nice, who isn't encumbered with either a criminal record or a wife? And she said, well, what do you think? Could you see... Is Justin it? Could you see Lillian with Justin? And everyone went, no! And there was this huge roar of disapproval from the audience. So they people clearly don't want her to end up with him. They do think that somehow he'd be sort of second best in some way. That was definitely the feeling there. I don't know how our listeners feel, really. I don't think anyone's ever said... People have said, oh, let them get on with it if it makes them happy. But I don't think anyone sort of said long term, yes, this is a good option. He should divorce Miranda and go out with Lillian, you know, marry Lillian sort of thing.
Mm.
I'm not even sure she'd want that. I think she would.
I think she would. You know, the way
I think she wants the security, doesn't she?
Well, she wants to be loved. And, you know, remember when she thought that it was all over, she went into a little minor depression, didn't she?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so this isn't just two ships bumping in the night. It's cool. We have an arrangement. She genuinely likes the guy, or at least she likes somebody lavishing attention on her.
Yeah.
Doesn't she?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately her kryptonite, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, there are so many things about this, the business with Stefan, and Andrew said he was surprised that that Brian wasn't let into the secret about Stefan. But is that because to preserve his kind of the strength of his business, he can't afford to let Brian know anything that may weaken him, that may weaken Damara? So he has to sort of keep it quiet and just pretend that everything is absolutely fine and above board. And that's why he didn't tell Brian. I don't know, but the whole...
Surely, because taking all the legals to one side, the fewer people know about this, the better, actually, for all concerned, really. If Brian was to be told about this, massive conflict of interest for Brian on a purely emotional level, because he's been in the village, what, 40-odd years?
Yeah.
You take the business element out of it.
Yeah.
But just him knowing that, that's not good at all. So the fewer people that know, the better, I would have thought.
We've got naked fingers now.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Naked fingers here. Still blushing from the revelation that Lucy says I'm her favourite caller in the... That was very nice. I did blush. I wasn't expecting that. You have terrible taste. Terrible, terrible taste. But I don't have favourites. I do. It's you, Lucy. It's definitely you. Now, let's go on to speak about my sound-alike, because, yes, I finally admitted that I do sound like Rob. My name's Robert. Why wouldn't I sound like a Rob as well? I was wrong about the stabbing. He wasn't going to stab Stefan, and Stefan didn't stab him, so I was wrong about that. And then earlier in the week, I said, he's got to be in some culvert somewhere, isn't he? You know, eyes popped out and tongue lolling, blue-faced and rotting away. Wouldn't that be lovely? But no, I don't think that's happened either. He's lying in wait, and he will return when we least expect it, to wreak his horrible revenge. But he'll fail. He will fail miserably. So that's my latest dud of a plot prediction for Rob. Finally, in anticipation of our whiskey meet-up in May, I'm going to drink a wee dram in honour of all my lovely Dumpty Dum friends. So, there we are. Slangivar. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Go on then.
I love him. And yes, I know I have terrible taste, Robert. I don't need anyone to tell me that, including you, thanking you. You've got to play this call right to the end, Royf, because there was a very, very funny bit right at the end where, I don't know, well, you just listen, it's very funny. I can't remember what he said, really. I was just so excited.
He said, oh my goodness, you like him, blah, blah, blah. Whiskey do, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I do sound like Rob. Yada, yada, blah, blah, blah.
Shall we put our blazers back on now and go in for double geography? Because this is all... he does sound like Rob, though. But yes, I think everybody's thinking, so has he really gone? Really, really gone? I know you're convinced he hasn't. I still don't know.
Oh, Lucy, come on. Even if it takes 6 months for this man to come back. Right?
Oh, yeah. Now, I know he'll come back at some point. Oh, he's going to be a Hazel Woolley, though, I think, isn't he? Disappearing and reappearing. Mm. You know.
Well, it's going to, as somebody says at some point on a call, we need to go through the next appointment, don't we? At the contact centre.
Yeah, this is his first. Yeah, absolutely. New York Nigel now, who I'm going to see in a few weeks' time. Hooray!
Yeah, you've been keeping that underneath your hat.
Haven't I tweeted it, you fool?
Well, yeah, I know. And then and somebody told me on Facebook.
You see, people wouldn't believe that we were actually married because we live such independent lives, wouldn't we? Would they, Royfield?
No, not at all. No. just whilst you're talking about New York meetups, I would just like to put it out to the West Coast posse, yo. People in San Francisco, the Bay Area, Northern California, I am putting together a Dumpty Dum meetup to outshine the paltry effort that's going to be put together in New York in a few weeks' time. It'll be the second annual San Francisco Dumpty Dum meetup, because we had, how many people did we have last time? It was approximately a year ago, and we had 12, 13, 15 or so turned up. It was awesome. I think we need to do that again, folks. Let's show New York how it's done. And I'm just going to pick a date randomly out of the ether. And that date will be... I need to edit this. Oh, let me run and go and get my phone. 1 minute, let me work this out. 1 minute. So how's about we say, good people of the Bay Area, Sunday the 19th of February at Pie Bar on Valencia in the Mission. At 3:30, because it doesn't open till 3:15, because it's pie, Lucy, you know. So it's 3:00. I think it actually opens at 3:14 or something or another. But anyway, so it's at Pie Bar, Sunday, February the 19th, 3:30. Be there or don't be a dumdy dummer.
Why are you having it at 3 in the afternoon?
That's what we did last time.
Oh, okay.
And people seem to be able to make it.
Oh, fine.
Why?
Nothing to do. No, just because we're doing it properly in the evening, like normal people. So I just wondered why yours wasn't going to be as good. And it's up to you, really, isn't it?
F off. Ours is going to be so much better. Just because you're going to a private members
it
club.
It so isn't going to be better.
Well,
we have properly descended now, haven't we? Yeah. We've had poo. Our
event is my event's going to be better than your event.
I'm going to a party and you're not coming, and it's going to be better than yours because you're having yours at a stupid time.
All right, then. Okay, here we go. San Francisco and Bay Area Dumdy Dummers. Right. If you would like to meet up in the evening, so I know we did do Sunday afternoon last time, and that seemed to work for all things considered. But if you want to have a little bit of a drink, why don't you tweet me, message me? Let's try and do it for that weekend. So let's say the weekend of the 18th or the 19th of Feb. I don't mind doing a Saturday evening at all, to be honest with you. But tweet me, email me, we'll sort it all out, and we will have lots of fun. More fun than will be had in boring old East Coast New York. That's all I'm saying.
Now, boring old New York.
Yeah. You know, oh, we're going to a members club. Oh. So anyway, whatevs. Moving on. Now, who's next?
New York Nigel, who I'm going to meet, as I said, which is what started off this whole thing.
He is lovely. And I think I said this before, but after we met last year, we did have a lovely walk for about a mile or so through the streets of New York. And then we bidded each other adieu. And no, he's just lovely. I really like him.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's New York Nigel here calling in about Jill's character transplant. One of the things we really love about The Archers is that the stories are almost 100% character driven. We love the characters first and then the story second. And the writers do a fantastic job of that. But in this case, it strikes me that somebody thought about a story first, the return of the Fair Brethren, and Jill was shoved into the storyline, no matter what her personality was beforehand. And I really don't care how this has affected Pip. She's a nuisance, and I wish she'd just bugger off. But I do care how it sits with one of the longest-running characters in the story. Jill has always been the peacemaker in the family, and to hear her acting as a sort of petulant and petty cow, saying things that are totally out of character, has caused whiplash for me, basically. And now it seems that she's whiplashed us back again to serve the irritating Toby and Pip storyline. And secondly, Lillian's line to Helen, "I want you to believe it," struck home. I want to believe it too. They made us believe in Rob's arrival and his behaviour over 3 or 4 years. So why can't they make us believe in his departure? The plot lines associated with Rob are being treated with what looks more like triage than a naturally unfolding storyline with psychological cohesion. If every victim of domestic abuse or coercive control was blessed with a spouse that just disappeared in a puff of smoke, the world would be a happier place. I was as happy as anyone to hear Pat send Ursula packing. That was a great, great scene, played it a couple of times, but it sounded more like a melodrama than anything else. Bye bye Barrow Farm, bye bye the flood, Charlie Thomas, who knows what else. There doesn't seem to be an organic connection that leads us out of this story with the same sort of thread that led us into the story through the Archer's world. And I'm sorry, because a very moving, horrible and convincing story sprang out of the very same soil. And perhaps that's because it's easier for script writers to make us believe in abuse than it is for, to make us believe in redemption. So they simply took the easy way out. Bye-bye, Rob. Bye-bye, Ursula. Bye-bye, Bruce. Poof. Pat says we've had enough. So anyway, hope to call in again soon. In the meantime, so lovely to be part of this Dumpty Dum world. Bye now.
Right. Jill's character transplant. It's a bit odd, isn't it? We've kind of swung one way and, as you said, then swung rapidly back. And I can see why you've got character whiplash. But I did think that it sort of made sense. I think she knew that she was
out of order.
Just being daft, but she couldn't stop. And it was Peggy who sort of talked her into it, because Peggy's her link with that. Peggy remembers it. No one else does, really. I mean, I know Auntie Cardboard does, but she seems to have become mute for the minute.
And Carol, Carol Toboggan, because remember Carol right at the start of this said, not really angry with Toby, are you?
No. But Carol kind of has been telling her off for it. And Jill didn't want to be told off for it. She just wanted to think, yes, I know. You know when you're being stupid and you know you are. You don't want someone to say to you, you're being stupid. You want someone to go, it's all right. We all do this sometimes. Don't worry about it. Just pack it in now, probably. And Carol's a bit lectury. And Peggy just said, I've messed this up as well.
I disagree. Carol was actually, I think, quite gentle with her. And it was literally the last time we heard substantively from Carol, and Carol said when Jill was going on, Carol said, but this is not really about Toby though, is it, Jill? She didn't say, you silly old bat, it is not about Toby. She said, there's something else, isn't there, Jill? And Jill was like, oh well, Carol was actually quite sympathetic towards her, I thought, or quite gentle anyway. She didn't go in there she didn't.
No, maybe not. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on her. But
that's unlike you to be harsh, isn't it, Lucy?
I just think she knew. I think Jill knew and what she was doing, and that Peggy was the absolute right person
whilst we're on this. We haven't really talked about the fact that Lizzie had also said to her mum as well, like, you know, dad did love you, etc. And Jill was like, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this, which I thought was absolutely a lovely scene as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, New York Nigel, back to the call. What else?
I think he did sum it up when he said, I was as happy as anyone to get rid of Rob, but that sounded more like melodrama. And it really did, you know, go out, leave my family and go out into the storm, as she, you know, pulls her cloak around her ears. But yes, I know we've had 2 years wrapped up in 2 weeks, but it's early days. We'll see what happens. They're hoping we're all just going to forget somehow, aren't they? That we were ever as involved as we were, but some of us will not forget. And then he'll come back, and then we'll go, oh God, he's back, and then we'll moan again, because that's what we do. We like moan, whatever they do.
I don't moan. I have constructive comments to make. Never moan. Moaning is not in my purview, Lucy. Never moan.
you're a memory zone.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, and that's it. Oh, and now we have an emailer in a row. We have two. Helen, at first, who said, it's me, the one that occasionally sends Royfield map porn via Twitter.
You know what? I'm getting an awful lot of awesome, awesome maps. I got one from Blythe Spirit this week. I know we're talking about Helen, but Helen, just hold fire a minute. This was musical references from all around the world. So there was like a map of the world, and it was like Tulsa, as in 24 hours from Tulsa.
Yeah.
And then there would be things like Echo Beach, which there's actually a place called Echo Beach, and then that's on the map. And then it was like Waterloo Sunset, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And then America was called Born in the USA. Thank you, Bly Spirit. That was just like fantastic. Because when I first came to, when I came to the States a couple of years ago, I actually said I was going to go on a musical tour, and I wanted to, you know, email when I was 24 hours from Tulsa and, you know, and do all of that.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually now have the map to do it. So thank you, Bly Spirit. Ah. Mm. Anyway, Helen.
Helen. She said, I'd call in, but I don't know what vintage I am. The first episode I remember hearing as a Dumpty Diddler, aged about 6 to 7, was Eddie proposing to Clary. If you know what that makes me, then let me know and I'll break my caller-in-era virginity. Anyway, she said she loves how the BBC shares characters across their long-running dramas. Holby City appears in Casualty, vice versa. It now seems that they're doing it again, and we're going to find out exactly what Justin Elliott gets up to when he's in London. He held secret meetings with Max Branning at the top of the Shard to plot the downfall of Walford. Love the show. Thanks for all your hard work. I think Andrew, well, he did. Andrew Horn said the same thing. Justin's now, you know, but is it Damara? Is Justin actually running Damara in Walford and Borsetshire? He is leading fictional businessman, the BBC's go-to man for fictional businessmen, isn't he? Simon Williams.
Mm. Yeah, he's quite handsome as well, isn't he?
He is, he is. My mum really used to fancy him when he was, it used to be in a show with Nigel Havers, a soap opera, and she was, not a soap opera, a sitcom, and she really liked him.
Yep. I've probably said this before, but Simon Williams is the name of the superhero Wonder Man, just saying. And he's an actor, That's his thing. That he's a Hollywood actor, and somewhat, I can't remember if he was somewhat failed. He's like a crappy TV actor, and he is the superhero Wonder Man, but he's Marvel, hence Wonder Man, as opposed to Wonder Woman, which is DC. There you go. Moving swiftly on. Anything else?
Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
Rex and his pity party, she is called this. I can't call because I work in TV studios and generally I'm sitting somewhere. I can't talk. I don't know if the first time rules count for emails, but I think I'm a Siobhan. I'm an independent adjudicator on TV game shows and I live in Hertfordshire. That is an amazing job. I never even knew that was a job. How interesting. She's at Olivia VDW on the Twitters. This might be contentious, but I've been driven to email because I'm being driven insane by Rex and his one-man pity party. I know we're supposed to love, admire, and feel sorry for Rex. I think love is a bit going a bit far, Olivia. But I'm not convinced. He's dripping about asking for jobs that he has no experience of. That's fine, Rex. Just watch a video and you can do the lambing. And his bloody lentil doll is just pitiful. I fully expect him to start knitting himself a hair shirt while whipping himself in the Bull car park. He has zero experience of farming. It hasn't crossed his mind that the children of farmers who grow up working on farms then go to college. No, Rex, with his entitled attitude, believes that such a farming business should fall into his lap. He has made such a success of his seasonal farming business that one month after Christmas, he has no money. As for his judgmental, I saw what you did to Anisha when she quite rightly got one over on Jazza. Not sure about the quite rightly bit. In his hilariously dodgy kilt, when he was planning on humiliating her, needs to stop being such a misery guts.
You know,
given we know had a decent and expensive education with every opportunity, and he is cutting the occasional hedge and whinging, I'm sure there's something out there for me. I just don't know what it is. He needs to get a proper job. And she continues in the same vein. And she said, if it's revealed that Toby has anything complicated going on in Brighton, then it would be utterly unbelievable that Rex would not have thrown that at him at some point. So I think the Brighton thing is a red herring.
Well, it can't be a red herring because, sorry to do this, we've had our noses rubbed in Brighton for, 6-9 months or so, and the Brighton wick is slowly being turned up. Now he's in a relationship with Pip. He's finding it harder and harder to come up with the excuses. And moving on to yesterday's episode, yesterday being Sunday, he suddenly takes off after half promising to be there for Sunday lunch, and he takes off to go to Brighton. So Brighton is going to come to a head sometime soon.
See, but if it was custody, it would be weekends, wouldn't it? Exactly like it is. It's a weekend every 3 weeks.
But one of the amazing things about doing this podcast is how people can have such different takes on characters. Because whilst I agree that Rex is a little bit sackcloth and ashes, right, the whole thing with the lentil doll is just to put him in sharp relief with his brother, isn't it?
Yeah.
But here he's somebody who's trying to live, you know, within his means, so to speak, as opposed to the other one who just has no financial probity at all. Less that there's a pity party, more of this the fact that he's just incredibly careful, right? To the point of being, you know, boring and sanctimonious with it. But he is a careful kind of character. I think much more interesting than all of that, Helen, is the fact that him and Anisha are going to kind of get it on, aren't they? There's something going on there. And I think
you're talking to Olivia, not Helen now.
Oh, am I? Sorry.
Yes.
Oh, crumbs. Yeah, sorry, Olivia. So much for a lack of notes, Mr. Brown. Anyway, so Olivia, you meanie, let him have his fun with Anisha. I actually thought, though, Lucy, when Anisha came into this, that it was going to be a little bit of a love interest for our big-time barrister.
Oh!
And I completely didn't have the ages. I obviously mismatched the ages completely. I just thought, here is a professional, because she's a vet, a female character, single, coming into the village. We have a barrister who is gay, and they're going to contrive to kind of put them together.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't even think of Rex.
No.
But she made a point of saying, didn't she, to Jazza, "Ooh, who's he?"
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And then as contrived to leave the pub with him.
Yeah. What did you think about her cheating?
I thought it was, I can't help but just talk about this in terms of the plotting of it. I just actually thought it was a bit poor. It was, we have these, it was obviously a set piece in terms of, let's introduce these two characters to each other, Rex and Anisha. And the device of how to do it, let's put the two Scots in the village, it's kind of Burns night. I didn't believe that Jazza would get drunk underneath the table. And okay, yeah, she was throwing the drinks away or whatever she was doing. But actually, as the plot device to get Rex and her together in a meaningful way and for them to share a secret, I actually thought was somewhat cumbersome. And somebody like Jazza's pretty canny and wily for tricks to be played, and I thought he would have spotted that. That was my gut. But I was just wandering up the street, bright, sunny Californian sun on my back. I was in quite a happy mood. I thought, that was a bit crappy, but I'll let that one go.
I'll let it go. You know what? I'm not going to write to my MP. I'm just going to let it go.
Ad break time?
We've finished the calls, yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Ooh, I'm loving this episode. right, oh, so now it's ad break time, and everybody that just fast forwards through the next couple of minutes, don't, because there's a new advert for a podcast called Walkie Talkie by one Lucy V. Freeman. Then we'll come back the other side with, not Millie Bell, but Yokel Bear. In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
awesome, yeah. For me, I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that for me it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together. Kiss, mouth open like
high. catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice.
Hello, I'm Lucy, and this is Walkie Talkie.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Walk my dog, Basil, pretty much every day in a foresty bit of London. I have been doing so for about 4 years, and I meet people that, as a dog walker, you talk to people. If your dogs get on, you tend to just, you say, which way are you going, can I come with you, and you just sort of amble along, and you can end up having the most extraordinary conversations, partly because you are walking side by side and facing front, so there's no embarrassing eye contact. If things get a bit heavy, if someone starts talking about something that they find emotional or difficult, then you can always divert your attention onto the dogs and relieve the tension a little bit. We've seen, as a group of dog walkers, we've seen people get pregnant, have children. We've seen people whose dogs have become ill and died, and the owner says, oh, I can never have another one, and then in a couple of months' time they appear with a puppy and everyone's delighted to see them. And we've seen people's marriages break down, new romances start. It's a lovely way to start your morning. It never fails to give me something nice to think about, something interesting to think about, even if it's not nice. And having a dog is a sort of a universality, really. The people aren't all like me, as I hope you'll realise over the course of the series.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Yokel Bear here calling from the rolling hills of Yokelshire with the social media roundup. There's been quite a lot going on, especially on the Book of Face, which is mainly what I'm going to concentrate on this week. There's been a lot of discussion, we've got a lot to say, so let's get straight into it. Millie Bell posted a thread, who knew that Jill and Peggy were such criminals as they contemplated throwing a brick through the Grace Archer window? Alison Butler said, I would love it if they somehow collaborated on this with Johnny and Freddie. An intergenerational team building event. Caroline Moss said, they'll just get the Button Girls to do it, same as they did for Rob's car. Yeah, Caroline, I think you've got a point there. Those Button Girls are going to be a handful next few years, aren't they? Cara Littlewood Poirier said, I think they need to get oiled up on illicit Fairbrother hooch and then go on a brick-robbing spree. That's terrifying, isn't it, really? But Jessica Dizel said, what if they get caught? Will they have to bake for community service hours? Yeah, I think they probably would. But God help anybody if Caroline's involved. You don't want Caroline baking for your community service hours. We also asked the question, the big question of the week. Has the Dark Lord been vanquished? Has Rob gone? Joe Jackson said, no, he's living in a bivouac in the woods near Lakey Hill, all dressed in black, including a balaclava, and he's plotting revenge. Georgina Smith agrees, saying, it's all gone a bit black ops, but her fear is that there's going to be a Giddy Jack kidnap sequence of events if they go the soap opera route. She also says, since the stabbing, we can't rule anything out. And I think you're right there, Georgina. Everything... nothing's off the table. We also wondered whether this would see the return of Charlie Thomas. I think possibility. Karen Valerie Hodgson said, I'd love Charlie to come back as he knows all about Rob's mismanagement of Borough Farm, the financial misdealings, etc., and he can enlighten Justin. Yes, he knows where the bodies are buried. Well, not the actual body, because actually Stefan turned up, you know, breathing and stuff. But yeah, I think you've got a point there. And other people said, yes, Charlie coming back, good thing. But the big theme was Charlie can come back, but don't go upsetting Adam and Ian. So a lot of love for Adam and Ian in this thread. In fact, Nigel Massey says, I'd love to have Charlie back, so long as he leaves Adam and Ian alone, but starts a torrid affair with Benny Carvalho. Yes, that needs to happen. Scriptwriters, take note. Andrew Faye said he wouldn't kick Charlie out of bed for eating biscuits. Yeah, I agree, but I think you know that. Anyway, other things we've been talking about. There was an interesting thing where both Helen O'Neill... and Emma Jones posted on the Book of Face about spotting Justin Elliott on EastEnders, or Simon Williams, the actor that plays him, and wondering where this has happened before. Where have the actors from The Archers turned up in other places? So, I'm setting you homework this week, listeners. Yes, there's homework now. Call in. Post on Facebook or on the forum where you have spotted the actors from The Archers turning up on your TV box or on other places on your wireless. So yes, let's do that. Jeremy Shaw posted something that just said, I like Lucy's joke, the end. Yes, Jeremy, I like that too. Rupert Byrne also wondered, I dread to think how Bert will react if he learns that Frieda has died as a result of Rob's action rather than an act of God. It will be the end of him. I'm really worried about that as well. I think Bert is... I wonder whether the end of Rob could be just Bert kills him. Because let's face it, he'd have grounds. So there's a bit of a roundup. There's also lots and lots of lovely other stuff on there. Go to the Book of Faith, go on to the forum. I should go on to the forum more, but you know, I will this week. So there you go, that's done. I'm out of here. Goodbye.
Yokel Bear, you know, Lucy, that was good, but it was a bit different not to have our Millie Bell, wasn't it?
I know, it's weird.
I quite like an Antipodean social media roundup, but I actually don't mind one from Swindon either. Good old yokel show. Luce, give us some yes. tweets of the last 7 days. Thank you very much, please.
Kaz, who's at Kaz Will Return, Helen's prison mate, said... Jazza sounds more coherent with booze in him than he does sober. It's a little harsh. So Duckling Tuft said, had Kenton saying to Jazza, Jazza, have you got your bagpipes? And Jazza saying, nay, I always walk like this, which made me laugh. Miriam said, everyone was hashtagging, where's Robbie? And she put, has anyone checked inside the inflatable Santa? That bloody Santa! That's another thing that there was no reason for. Anyway, that's where Rob is. Mark Reedman said when Roy was trying to get a shot of Tracy and decided to just bore her to death. It was quite rainy that evening. He said, after Roy's disquisition on his car's safety features, Tracy realised she was quite dry again. That's very rude. Karen Cunningham. This was genius. Kerry Davis got cornered by people on Twitter, if you can corner people on Twitter, saying, what is going on with Brighton? There had better be a bloody good reason for this, Kerry Davis. And he said, you know I can't comment. And she just, this is Tweet of the Week, she just put Kerry, blink once for love, child. That was very funny.
We haven't talked about the horror bin, have we, and Roy?
No, well, it was. She's just, at the moment, she's all light and no shade, isn't she? She's all just... She's what Vicky Tucker was in the beginning before the baby. She is what Susan was before, or Susan occasionally is before she gets a big storyline. You know, she's just the sort of the comedy woman, really. So we'll talk about her when she's kind of got a bit fleshed out. At the moment, we know exactly where all the flesh is, and it's, you know, there's kind of, there's nothing deep there, is there? Apart from the cleavage, apparently. That's it.
Do you like Gogglebox?
Yes. Well, I sometimes tweet for them, so I watch it for that.
Do you? You tweet for Channel 4?
No,
oh,
no,
no. Yeah, for that. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
No,
why?
No, because she mentioned that, didn't she? And that's partly one of the reasons why she just says, Roy, you and I have got nothing in common. Because she likes Gogglebox and he likes watching things on BBC Four. I like a good documentary.
You're the Land Rover in World War Two.
Absolutely. Anyway, we're hurtling through this episode. This is going to be one of those short but satisfying ones, Lucy.
Is it? I like those.
Bit like my stature is according to you.
I wonder what you're going to say then.
No. I kept it clean. Dumbdumb.com, folks, go there. Got a shop. It's awesome. Tractor. Now, I'd actually said to myself, I was going to name and shame people who were clustering that weren't organising dues. And I completely forgot to do that because I'm not looking at Tractor right now. But suffice to say, Candida Beeching has taken up the cudgels and she's going to organise a do for Devon and Cornwall, Dumdy Dummers. So if a do isn't organised in the next couple of weeks with a date, you know, written in stone, folks, go tweet her and harangue her. She's on Facebook, she's on the Twitters. She says she's going to do it and she's not going to let me down. Now, also, there's been some rumblings from the Toronto posse, and I think Simply Jenya said, Mary, not contrary, we need to meet up. So there's going to be some kind of Toronto rumblings. So, but remember, if you're anywhere in the great province of Ontario, keep the pressure up on your fellow Dumdy Dummers and something will happen. Dumdydum.com, go there. It's awesome. It's fab. It's smashing. It's super. I'm not looking at my notes at all. You'd think after 152 episodes, I wouldn't have to. But I can't. Now, folks, if you'd like
to... know the sodding phone number as well. I still don't.
No, I don't either.
Every week it gets us a surprise. Oh, is it me? God, so
If you'd like to help keep our little show on the road, there's a couple of ways this can be done, folks. You can do this by donating by hitting the donate button on our website. And I know a few people have actually thrown some shekels, some dollars, some euros our way in the last week or so. And that is absolutely wonderful. Otherwise, you can go into patreon.com and you can commit a whacking $2 per episode.
Steady. Wow. It'll all go towards building a fence around Ambridge.
Don't start me on this, Lucy.
I don't know whether it's to keep them in or us out. I'm not sure.
Don't start me on this, Lucy. Are you trying to edge me into me going off on a political rant?
No, I'm not, because I quite need a wee and you'll be going for hours.
All right. Why don't you tell people about the Academic Archers?
It's on the 17th to the 19th of February at the University of Lincoln. It is very funny, and they talk about social issues in an academic way through the medium of the Archers. It's the kind of thing that could only happen in England, and it's great. So go to it. Thanking you.
Folks, without you, this show is just Lucy and I. So we... It's true. It's true.
I know. Just sounds funny.
It's true. It's just Lucy and I. Just like. Anyway, so we need you to be the third spoke in our wheel, or whatever the heck the metaphor is, by sending us in your contributions. You can do this via a voice message via SpeakPipe, or you can call us on 02030313105. Now, SpeakPipe is the red tabby button thing on our website. And then you just kind of get on the show, and that'd be wicked and awesome. On social media, which is how this show was kind of born, you can find us specifically on Twitter, where we're at WDumMe. I'm at Royfield, which is R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. So if you fancy looking at some tweets which are misspelt, the odd word forgotten, and generally nonsensical, you know, follow me. You see a dyslexic in action. You're like, what has he just said? I'm like, oh, for God's sake, let's go and delete the tweet, rewrite it, and then the moment's gone. Anyway, that's me. Or there's Harriet. You can find her. She's Sandbridge. Now, she can actually write. She's proper. She had a proper
education. She can write and draw and do voices
and write really funny things. I can draw. I just can't
write.
Can you? Yeah. My daughter actually just had an exam to go to art school.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's brilliant.
She'll hear this Friday, and there, where she gets into the Etobicoke School of Art, and it's just like Fame. It's a high school for kids that want to major in the creative arts.
Wow.
Fingers crossed for my Ella Bella over there in Toronto. Now, if you want to read somebody who can properly format 140 characters into a concise, pithy, witty tweet, you can follow one... Lucy V. Freeman. But I've just done your bit. Sorry, Lucy. Anyway, her name's at Lucy V. Freeman, and she's on Twitter, and she's really quite funny, and you should really follow her, because I do, and she's just fab and awesome. On Facebook, we have more like-a-lookers than I can shake a stick at. And I tell you what, talk about listener, like-a-looker engagement. That Yokel Bear and Millie Bell, like a double act. I tell you what, Lucy.
They seem to be working really well together, don't they?
They are. It's a bit like you and me, but on Facebook.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, but without the rancor.
The what? Oh, the rancor.
Yeah. They actually genuinely like each other. they're two properly nice people that just kind of just get on. Yeah.
How odd.
Yeah, I know. Oof, that, you know, that yeah. You need a side to every relationship, don't you? Makes it much more interesting. So Facebook, go on there. There's loads of people having fun, listening to whatever Yokel Bear and Millie Bell are saying and commenting on that. So that's smashing. And I don't even know where to start, folks, with the last week of me being in the good old US of a country which I have a great amount of love and affection for. And the fact that, you know, it's a country built on ideals. And a lot of people we thought had forgotten those ideals. Those ideals of openness and taking in the world's poor, the world's hungry, and the world's dispossessed. But we thought...
As long as they're the right colour.
Well, this is the thing. And we thought that, by and large, Americans had forgotten that. But actually, they haven't. And I'm about to go and catch a plane, and I'm about to go into an airport, and I will be demonstrating with some Americans to say, you know what, Mr. Trump, go fuck yourself, right? You know, this land is the land of the free and the bold and the brave and all of that, and actually is incredibly inclusive. And it's just quite nice that my liberal sensibilities on the one hand, which I thought had taken a massive shaking in 2016, you kind of realise that actually no, right? Most people the world over are actually decent and actually do understand that some people are dispossessed. And just because they have another religion from you doesn't mean that they are other. They're still human beings. So anyway, that's me. Lucy V. Freeman, you got anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
No, only that if any of you agree with me that, as far as I'm concerned, all this America stuff started to go wrong when Royfield went over there.
No, it started that we to go do... right. No.
Last year, you went over there, lived there, and then everybody voted for Trump. You fool. That was you that did that. I don't know how, but I'm sure it was you.
No. I tell you what I do blame myself for, the Brexit vote. And all those Brexiteers, because actually I didn't vote because I was actually over here.
Oh.
Mm. And I didn't do a postal vote. But all I would say to Brexiteers, and I know there's got a lot of people going to say, mate, I've tuned into this to listen to two people talk about the Archers. Right. But just as a sign off, what I will say to those people that voted for Brexit in good faith, talking about the UK and political sovereignty, economic sovereignty, just let the last 7 days of President Trump be a warning to you that putting up physical, metaphorical walls, trying to dislocate yourself economically from reality, potentially this is where the country of my birth could actually end up. Just saying. And on that note, people can say, go screw yourself, Royfield. Right. You know what? No. This is just too important not to at least pass comment on. As I said, just look at the last few days.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And the mess of what's happened in the US and Britain, we're bigger and better than that. Just saying. Okay, goodbye, everybody.